Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. Good evening. Our topic for this evening is PGD and gender selection. We're going to do a quick summary of some of the sources related to this topic. PGD, for those who are unfamiliar, is genetic testing that's done on embryos. It gives you a lot of information, including gender, but for a lot of other important genetic factors also can be tested, like genetic abnormalities, and other things that we may come across in the course of our discussion. But I want to focus a little bit more on gender selection. Definitely the first part of this year, I found an article in the RJJ Journal by Rabbi Josh Flug very helpful in my research. Also the Nishmat Avraham by Avraham, he has some important stuff in there also, and a few other sources that I'll probably mention along the way. So, the concept of, also I should mention, Rabbi Kenneth Brander also has a shiur online on this, and his source sheets also were useful to me in my preparation. So, let's start with the sources. So, there's a Gemara in Maseches Shvuos, Daf Yud Ches Amabez. So, I want to first discuss the general concept of preference of gender. So the Gemara Maseches Shvuos says, "Amar Rechiya bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, kol haporish miishlo samach levesta, havian lo banim zacharim." Anybody who separates from his wife at the time close to when her cycle is expected. So there's a halacha that at a certain amount of time before her cycle is expected, they have to separate. So havian lo banim zacharim, he will merit to have male children. Amar Rechiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Another statement of Rechiya bar Abba and Rabbi Yochanan. Kol hamavdil al hayayin motzei shabbatot, havian lo banim zacharim. Anybody who says havdala on wine on motzei Shabbos, he will also merit to have banim zacharim, to have male children. And the Gemara in Baba Basra says, "Ma ya'ase adam v'yu lo banim zacharim." How could a person merit to have male children? Rabbi Elezer Omer, yifazer ma'otav laniyim, by giving away tzedakah. So, distributing his money to the poor. So what's brought out from this Gemara, these Gemaras, is that the concept of gender preference has precedence, and it doesn't seem to be an issue per se having gender preference in case a person wants to have boys. So there are certain things that Chacham tell her. There are many other things that Chazal mentioned also. I just picked a couple. I'm sure there are many scientific theories. There are many other theories how a person should go about having one gender more than the other. But so the concept of having gender preference has already basis in Chazal. It's not a problematic concept. The question that we have to analyze is, and I believe this is Rabbi Bleich's observation, I think, the concept of gender preference has basis. The question is, how do we go about making that happen? And is PGD, genetic testing of embryos, in an IVF situation where the in vitro fertilization, where the fertilization is done outside the body, is that going to be a valid method of determining or choosing the gender of a child? So the first question to address, and this is addressed extensively in Rabbi Flug's article, is the question of, would a couple fulfill the mitzvah of puruvu using either IVF or artificial insemination or some sort of, a method, a scientific method of conceiving a child that's not through the normal relations between husband and wife? So the very important Gemara, or a very important really source and concept introduced by the Gemara, is based on the Gemara Maseches Chagiga, Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph. The Gemara has a discussion about a woman who got pregnant, but she seems to still be a virgin. Her hymen's intact. And the Gemara is trying to figure out, should we concern that she had relations and therefore she would not be able to marry, let's say, the Kohen Gadol, for example, or something else. So the Gemara has a suggestion that maybe we're not so concerned that she had relations. Maybe Chayshinan, the Gemara said, Chayshinan, Shem Be'ambatia Ibera. Maybe in a bathtub, in a bathhouse, or some sort of bath, she became pregnant. A man was using the bath before. He left some zera, some seed in the bath, and she became pregnant through that. Now, from my understanding, we don't have any scientific understanding of how something like this could happen. It's interesting because I believe Rabbeinu Chananel on the Gemara says that it's ma'aseh nisim, it's miraculous, which is interesting because for probably 1,000 years or maybe long, a couple of 1,000 years, this concept and this Abra Ba'Amvatia was a theoretical reality, a theoretical possibility. But in modern day times where we have ways that a woman can become pregnant without having relations with a man, right, through IVF or IUI, artificial insemination, so it's this is a reality. So the way we're going to relate to this case of Nisabra Be'ambatia, if she became pregnant in the bath, is going to may shed light on our question of how to relate to our cases of IVF and IUI in general. So the Beis Shmuel quotes the Chalkos Mechokek, who says the following question: Yishli Yistapik Isha Shinis Abra Ma'ambatia Im Ha'avkim Puruvu Vim Nikra Beno L'chol Davar. So the doubt of the question that Chalkos Mechokek asked is: does a situation this Abra Ma'ambatia, where she became pregnant in this unusual way, does the father, whoever is the male who contributed to this his zera, his seed to this pregnancy, does he fulfill the mitzvah of Pru Urvu, and is this considered to be his child for all purposes? So the Beis Shmuel says we should bring a raya that yes, what's the raya? From the Haggadah Smak, as quoted by the Bach in Yerodiyak Simen Kuf Sadi Hei. What does the Smak say? The Smak says that a woman, Isha was Harashil Shal Tishka Val Sadin Shishacha Valehan Ish Acher, Pentitaber Mishachvat Zara Shal Acher. So we're nervous, she shouldn't sleep on a sheet that another man slept on, unless she was washed in between. Why? We are nervous because maybe she's going to get pregnant from, maybe there would be some zera, some seed left on the sheet. She's going to get pregnant from that. And And we're nervous that she's going to get pregnant, she's going to have a child. The child's not going to know who the father really was. And therefore, that child may end up, you know, starting to date and date some guy and marry him. And it's going to turn out that it's really her brother because her father had a child with somebody else and she didn't realize that was her father. So therefore, the Smak says she shouldn't sleep on the sheets that another man slept on unless the sheets were cleaned in between. So the Beis Shmuel concludes, Nishma dehavi b'no l'chol davar. So it sounds like that really would be his child, and by implication, the father would fulfill the mitzvah of Pruvu. Now the Taz, also in Eben HaEzer and Siman Aleph, he has the following observation. He says he's not so convinced because he doesn't really necessarily think you could bring a raya from this smack, a proof from this smack, because maybe only the smack only meant it as a stringency, meaning don't sleep on the sheets because it'd be stringent, because maybe, you know, there's going to be problems with the brother, identification, etc. But it doesn't necessarily mean that as a leniency, we're going to say, oh, and he fulfilled the mitzvah of approval, he doesn't have to do it again. So the Taz is not convinced. But Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and many others have similar logic, where they say that certainly according to the Beis Shmuel, and you would fulfill the mitzvah of Pruvu in a situation of artificial insemination. Let's assume for now that IVF would be the same. However, he says, even according to the Taz, who said that maybe we only say it's his child as a stringency when she becomes pregnant on the sheets. So it's only as a stringency, even the Taz would agree in such a situation where the man actually does something, right? Where he contributes to the pregnancy, right? In a situation of IVF, IUI, where the father is contributing, he does something in order to contribute to the, it may not be the direct relations with his wife, but he contributes in some way, so maybe that would be a sufficient action so that he will fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu. And I saw recently in the Minchas Asher, in Chelek Alef Simen Samach Tes, he also assumes that a man would fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu under such circumstances. There are those that argue that Tzitz Eliezer very interestingly says it's considered to be a mitzvah that's done in an unusual way, therefore he doesn't get credit for the mitzvah. Others maybe argue for other reasons, but the opinion of Moshe Feinstein, the opinion of Rav Asher Weiss, is that a man would fulfill the mitzvah of Puruvu. It's just two interesting observations regarding Puruvu in this circumstance. First of all, somebody asked me when I was giving this shiur earlier today that seemingly the man didn't have intention. Let's say in the case of Nisabra Ba'Amvatia, where the Beis Shmuel, who seems to say, seems like he's saying that he would fulfill the mitzvah of Puruvu. What's fascinating is that the man didn't even have intention. He didn't know that he was impregnating her. He wasn't planning on impregnating her. And he would fulfill the mitzvah of Puruvu without intention. So I thought it was a very good question. My thoughts were related to the second observation that's very relevant to this question. So, there's a very well known discussion about the following issue. So, I may not be quoting the Gemara exactly correctly, but this is the general idea of the Gemara. The Gemara is a discussion about whether or not a man who has children before he's Jewish and he converts, and let's say for argument's sake, I'm not sure if it's necessary, but for argument's sake, the children convert as well. So, is that, would he fulfill the mitzvah of Peru? Meaning he gave birth to two children, right? So, did he fulfill the mitzvah of Peru? Now, he didn't conceive them when he was Jewish, but now he's Jewish. So that's the question. So the Gemara seems to say, at least according to some opinions, that he will fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu. And the question is, how does that work? He wasn't Jewish when he did the mitzvah, right? You can't fulfill a mitzvah before you're obligated in the mitzvah, at least before you're Jewish, right? So there's two possible answers. One solution is the solution of the Minchas Chinuch, who says that the mitzvah of Puravu is result-oriented. Meaning, the mitzvah is to have a son and a daughter. It's not necessarily the action of conceiving the son and the daughter that's the fulfillment of the mitzvah, but it's having a son and a daughter. So, in that situation, he has a son and a daughter. The other approach to this question, which sounds like maybe from the Rambam, that you would say something like this, is that really the action is the conception. But when does a person no longer have to do the action of the mitzvah? When he has a son and a daughter. So a son and a daughter don't necessarily indicate a fulfillment of the mitzvah, but they may indicate where a person does not have to do the mitzvah anymore. Even if he didn't fulfill the mitzvah, okay, but he's stuck, so to speak, meaning because the mitzvah is done. There's no more place for the mitzvah once he has a son and a daughter, but he didn't actually fulfill the mitzvah. Now tying that back to this discussion, so first of all, that may explain how a person who fulfilled the mitzvah of Puravu without intention, in a situation where the woman became pregnant with in the ambatia or on the sheets. So in that situation, we would say that you're right, he didn't have intention, but the mitzvah peruvu is not action-oriented, it's result-oriented. And since, as a result, he has a son and a daughter, so that's it, he fulfilled the mitzvah of peruvu. That's point number one. Point number two is this concept of saying that IVF or artificial insemination would fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu works much better if we identify the mitzvah of Puravu as being result-oriented. This is what Rabbi Fluke points out in his article. If it's result or if it's, if it's result-oriented, so even though he didn't do a normal action of relations with his wife to be able to conceive the child, but since as a result of whatever he did, he has a son and a daughter, that would be sufficient. If it's action-oriented, then it's much more difficult. I don't think it's impossible, but it's much more difficult to assert that a person will fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu under these circumstances. So the next question is, does a person have to do this? Meaning, let's say a couple knows that they're not going to be able to have children otherwise. So are they obligated to undergo fertility treatments to fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva about this, and he says that he thinks not. He thinks they're not obligated. And similarly, Rav Asher Weiss, in his tshuva that I mentioned before, in Minchas Asher Chelakav Simen Samach Tes, he also says that the couple is not obligated to undergo fertility treatments in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu. And the question is, why not, right? I mean, this is a mitzvah, right? And assuming that they can afford it, right? So the financial issue shouldn't necessarily be a reason not to fulfill the mitzvah. And people spend money on mitzvah, and this is the way they fulfill the mitzvah. So why not? So Rabbi Fluke has three suggestions. One possibility, maybe we would employ the concept of onus rachmana patre. Onus means something's out of your control. So in this situation, fulfilling the mitzvah in the normal way is out of their control, right? So therefore, they don't have to do it. I mean, even if they could create a situation where they could fulfill the mitzvah, but they are patre, they are exempt from fulfilling the mitzvah. Now the question is, I'm not 100% sure, and it could be I didn't fully understand the Rabbi Fluke's reasoning, but I'm not fully convinced that this is necessarily a situation of onus. Meaning, if they have the avenue, they have the access, I'm not really sure why this would be onus as possible. Rabbi Fluke answered that question, but that's my understanding. The other suggestion is that we know, let's work with the premise, there's a little bit of a dispute about this, let's work with the premise that a person has to spend up to 1/5 of his assets, of what he has, in order to fulfill a mitzvah. So the interesting discussion in the postgame, which is also discussed in the Shuvah from Minchas Asher, is is a person's emotional well-being or going through great inconvenience or discomfort in order to fulfill the mitzvah, is that considered the equivalent of spending more than one-fifth? And many poskim say that it is. That it's being very discomfort, very inconvenienced, or it's very, very difficult for a person. Maybe it's very embarrassing, very, very uncomfortable. Maybe it's invasive, whatever it is, to fulfill the mitzvah. Now, that would be considered like spending more than one-fifth. Now, obviously, many mitzvot are not so easy, and they require effort and energy. But in a situation like this, where a couple, they find that the fertility treatments are just too much for them, they're too invasive, it's whatever other discomfort they have, maybe that would be another reason why they're exempt from the mitzvah of Peruvu. And the third suggestion, which is a little bit more conceptual, that Rabbi Fluk suggests, is that maybe we only employ the concept, let's say, of Let's start with the following precept, okay? So as we said before, it's not 100% clear that they would be fulfilling the mitzvah of peruvu. But nevertheless, maybe we should say, safek d'oraita l'chumra, a matter of doubt by a Torah law, we have to be machmir, we have to be stringent, and therefore they should fulfill the mitzvah by undergoing IVF. However, there's a twist to this. Now, normally when I say safek d'oraisa l'chumra, a matter of doubt by a Torah law, I have to be machmir, I have to be stringent, would be a situation, let's say I'm not sure if I fulfilled the mitzvah of lulav or not. So I shake the lulav again, and this time I know for sure I fulfilled the mitzvah. Good. Now, let's say in a situation where even if I do it again, I won't know for sure that the mitzvah was fulfilled. So like in this situation, let's say I were to go ahead and do IVF, or go ahead, the couple were going ahead and do an IVF or IUI to be able to have the child. Now, do they know for sure they fulfilled the mitzvah? No, because according to some opinions that we saw, they do not fulfill the mitzvah of peruvu when they have a child in this way. So then in that situation, even if they go ahead and do it, they won't know if they fulfilled the mitzvah. So maybe we don't say safek d'oraisa l'chumra, that a matter of doubt in Torah law, we go to be stringent, we don't say it under these circumstances. Okay. Next issue. Let's say a couple is able to have children naturally, but they have many children of one gender, and they want to undergo IVF to be able to have a child of the other gender. So would they be allowed to do that? So there is some discussion about this, and if you look in Rabbi Brander's pack, which I think is available online, attached to his shir online, definitely there are many poskim who poskim who do allow this, and a person should certainly consult with their own rav, their own rabbi, when coming to a conclusion. But what I see as what many poskim hold is that they say the following: that even IVF and IUI, there are some halachic issues related to the way the seed of the man is collected, and maybe some other issues involved with the embryos and excess embryos and other halachic issues. Now, it seems to be the consensus of the poskim is that in a situation of infertility, we will allow the couple to do it. The value of allowing them to have children may override whatever halachic issues may be involved, or the halachic issues may be non-issues, whatever it is. But in order just so they can choose the gender of the child to undergo IUI or IVF or some sort of fertility treatment where there are maybe other halachic issues involved, that many people discourage. And if you look on the source sheet, Rav Avadia Yosef, when he discusses IVF, he allows it in a situation where this is the only way that they can conceive. But if they can conceive it otherwise, he discourages doing IVF. So to do it in order to choose gender, it would seem to be, would be discouraged. But again, a person has to ask the Rav, because there's much discussion about this. Let's take a situation where the couple is doing IVF anyways. For whatever reason, they asked the rabbi, and whatever reason they're doing IVF, maybe they can't conceive otherwise, whatever it is, they're doing IVF anyways. They got a halachic permission to do IVF, and they're doing IVF. So now, the question is, can they now choose the gender, right? Or maybe even another case, let's say they're doing PGD anyways, can they now choose the gender? So again, there are definitely some who do allow it, and certainly, again, a posik must be discussed, this must be discussed with. However, Rabbi Avram, as Avram quotes from Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who did not feel like it was appropriate. And Avram said that he suggested the following suggestion to Rosh Hashanah Zalman why it should not be, and Rosh Hashanah Zalman said that he agrees. So there's a well-known Gemara that I won't go into so much detail, but basically it's a meeting between Yishayahu HaNavi and Chizkiyahu HaMelech in Maseches Brachos, and there Yishayahu HaNavi is giving Chizkiyahu rebuke for not having children. And Chizkiyahu says, I'm not doing this. I saw Beruach HaKodesh, with divine inspiration, that they're not going to be righteous. They're going to be, they're not going to go on the right path. So Yishayahu HaNavi says to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Behadik havshi derachman alamali, meaning the hidden matters of God, why are you getting involved? Meaning, sorry, lamalach, right? Behadik havshi derachman alamalach. Why are you getting involved in the hidden matters of God? Meaning, Hashem gave you a commandment to have children. So what happens afterwards is none of your business. It's Hashem's decision, right? Hashem gives you a mitzvah to have children, so you have children. And whether they become tzaddikim or rishayim, that's not your business. It's Hashem give you a mitzvah, you have to do it. So perhaps here, this matter of gender is like it's Hashem's domain, so to speak. It's so to speak like a hidden matter. And therefore, it's not really the place of us to intervene and to get involved. However, again, there definitely are poskim who allow such a thing in a situation, especially when a couple has many children of one gender, they want to have a child of another gender, but definitely people should consult with their rabbis when deciding. Another very interesting philosophical aspect angle of this question of gender selection, I came across in an article by Rabbi Yossi Sprung, who seems to be connected to the halachic organization or the Beis Din of Rav Asher Weiss. So he has an article where he discusses this idea of PGD, gender selection, etc. And he discusses the following philosophical issue. So we have a belief in Hashkacha of Hashem, Hashem's divine providence, Hashem's divine taking care of the world and involvement in the world. So the question, right, is maybe if a person, let's take a person of a situation of lo aleinu illness. So a person is ill. So maybe we shouldn't get involved at all, right? So we know the Gemara says, based on the pasuk of Rapo Yirape, that mikan tinitan bishutz le rofe le rapo. So we know that from based on the pasuk of Rapo Yirape, that a doctor has permission to heal. Now, why does he need permission to heal? He needs permission to heal because he's, so to speak, going against the divine decree. Hashem decided a certain thing should happen to a certain person for whatever reason, and by healing him, he's going against the divine decree. So we know that, okay, but the answer is yes, Hashem does allow for refuah. And now there's a very interesting philosophical question of why that's so. Why does Hashem allow for refuah? So I'm not going to get into the details of the philosophy of why Hashem does or does not allow it. However, Sprung in this article, I'm assuming it's based on the teachings of, I think it's based on the teachings of Rav Asher Weiss, says the following. He says that when we get involved in the medical world, or we get involved in the scientific world in terms of people and their health and their lives and things like this, so it must be under the rubric, under the umbrella of refuah. So let's say in a situation where there's a known genetic illness, that a genetic abnormality that could exist within the fetus, right? And therefore they do embryo testing in order to see if the genetic abnormality is there or not. So that's considered to be refuah. That's considered to be a medical need, and therefore that's considered that it would be allowed, right? But, he says, in order to choose the gender of the baby, even to fulfill the mitzvah of puravu, he says, that's not considered to be refuah, and therefore it would not be allowed. It's considered to be an improper, and I'll quote you, improper and unacceptable attempt to alter Hashem's decree. Just to close, there are a couple of interesting cases where many poskim do allow. And again, each case must be dealt, must be asked to a rav, to a posik, to decide. But there are some interesting cases where the poskim do allow gender selection for, you know, sometimes for medical or even non-medical needs. So one situation would be a genetic disease that's, let's say, Y chromosome linked, right? Where they know that if there's a male, there's a much greater likelihood that a certain disease is going to exist. So the example Rosh Hashanah Zalman allowed, that was discussed, was hemophilia, where where they know that it's Y chromosome linked, and therefore there's much greater chance that the child, if it's a male, is going to do it. They want to do gender selection to have only females. So in that situation, Rav Shlomo Zalman allowed it. Two interesting situations where, again, there are poskim who allow it. I'm not necessarily saying this is the absolute halacha for everybody. Are situations where one interesting situation is where there was a man. This happened, I think, many years ago, but about a man who was a kohen and he was unable to father children. And his wife, okay, wanted to have children, so they were going to use a donor sperm. They're going to use a sperm from a donor. However, here's the problem. The child is not his child. It's her child, but it's not his child. But he's a Kohen. So if they have a male child, so now this child becomes bar mitzvah, and they can't give him the first aliyah, right? He can't go up and do Berachas Kohanim with his father, right? So it's going to be very obvious that this child, that this is not his child. But people don't know that he didn't father the child. They don't know that they used donor sperm. So he wanted to use gender selection, PGD, in order to have a female to avoid the embarrassment. So in that situation, the Rabbanim allowed him to do it. Again, each question must be asked to a posik. Another very interesting circumstance, which is a little bit reverse, is there's an interesting dispute as to whether, a general discussion as to whether adopted children, whether there's a problem of yichud with their adoptive parents or not. It's a big dispute, big discussion, not for right now. So, in a situation, another situation, let's say, where, forget about, you know, the father's not a Kohen, but they're using donor sperm, so it's not his child. So if a person follows the more stringent opinion that says that only biological children a man is allowed to have yichud with, but children that are grew up, even from birth, in his home, he would not be allowed to have yichud. So if the child, now the mother is the mother no matter what, whether it's a boy or a girl. The father is not the father. So if he has a son, so there's no problem of yichud. If they have a daughter, then there is a problem of yichud. So they want to do PGD specifically to have boys so that they can avoid the issue of yichud. Again, they're following the stringent opinion. There are many opinions on this matter. I believe Moshe Feinstein was lenient by adoption. I assume he'd be lenient in this case also. But well-known, the Lubavitcher Rabbi was machmir. So they follow the more stringent opinion. So in that case also, the Rabbanim allowed them to do PGD in order to have a boy in order to avoid the issue of yichud. Okay, so here's just some of the issues. There are many, many more issues. There's much more to discuss about this topic, but here's a brief overview of some of the issues involved in PGD, gender selection, whether or not the couple fulfill the mitzvah of purvu, whether they need to do it, whether they're allowed to do IVF specifically to have a child of one gender, if they're doing IVF anyways, that they could do it, situations of medical need. We touched on some of the many issues, but again, there's much, much more to discuss. And if anybody is interested in more information on the topic, feel free to contact me. I'd be happy to share more information. Have a wonderful evening. Kol Tov.